The clock's running out on December deal drops at Lowe's, but there's still time to wrap up something they'll love. Shop great gifts under $50, like the DeWalt Elite Series 100-piece bit set. Plus, if you order by 2 p.m., you get same-day delivery by 8 p.m. Shop December deal drops while you can. Lowe's. We help, you save.
Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores.
From NBI Studios, this is Truth and Justice, a crowdsourced investigation in real time. I'm Bob Ruff. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Truth and Justice. Today's episode, we're kind of taking a breath and catching up a little bit, and we have some news to share with you guys as well. But as we've gone through a ton of information in the last 3 weeks, as far as the investigation that was done into Chris's case in the post-conviction years after he was incarcerated, we went through all the different forensic evidence, we did all the affidavits about Shaky, and then in this last week, we covered the Gerald Matthews or Chris Stokes confessions. I want to take a pause for a minute, and I've invited Dr. Nikki Jackson to come back on the show. As you guys have heard from her before a couple of times, Nikki is the one who originally brought the case to us, and she's been listening along with the podcast, and I wanted her to come on and just kind of talk about what we've covered so far and any notes she has. Nikki and her team have been working on this case for 5 years now, so we just want to try to... Before I move any further, I want to make sure that we don't have any loose ends or holes left in the case that we haven't covered quite yet. First of all, Dr. Jackson, thanks for joining me. It's good to have you back.
Thanks for having me.
I guess the first thing I want to do, we don't really have a real plan here other than, I know you said you gathered up some notes of things that you thought that we should address before we move any further. So I guess what I'm going to do is I'm just going to kind of turn things over to you and we'll just have discussions about these. If you want to go through the different elements that we've covered so far or maybe that we haven't covered, that you want to make sure that we get on the record before we move on beyond this point.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for giving me this opportunity. First and foremost, thank you again for taking this case on, because I know this is a really challenging case. There's a lot of information. It's a lot to unpack. I still have to go back and review notes because there's thousands and thousands of pages. So to do this even in a year since you've started, it's been pretty impressive of what you've been able to do. So thank you so much for even taking this on. And I know, you know, we all appreciate you very much. I also know you're also limited with some of the things that you have access to because, you know, we're not sharing everything with you. So we're obviously working on legal things, so we can only share certain things with you. So I understand that when you're asked questions, you might not know the answers, but there's reasons for that. You don't have access to everything at this point. So I'm going to try to help fill in some of the gaps if I can. All right.
Perfect.
All right. First of all, I want to just go back to some of the things that have always stood out with me. And that's going back to the beginning. And that's like looking at who Liz and Sheila are. You know, you talk quite a bit about the victimology. And I am a victimologist. And one of the things that really struck out immediately was that nobody ever talked to the victims' families. No one.
Right.
Police, prosecutors, no one has ever really sat down and talked to them to better understand who these folks were. And if we understood who they were, then maybe we'd have a better understanding of who they were with that night as well. And the thought that, you know, anybody would suggest that these two women were prostitutes and prostituting themselves that night seems ludicrous to me. They had only met a couple of hours earlier. So, you know, it's hard pressed for me to believe that two women just meet and all of a sudden are like, yeah, let's go out and prostitute in the middle of February and, you know, take all their clothes off, including socks, and engage in sex. It's just impossible to believe that. The other thing I do want to talk about is the Gary police at that time period. I do think things have improved, at least I hope so. But during this time period, the 80s, 90s, early 2000s, I found out that it was common practice for the Gary police to investigate, who were investigating homicides, were also patrol officers. I'd never heard of such a thing. And I
really?
Was told, yeah, isn't that crazy?
Yeah, I've never heard of that either.
Me neither. And I was like, wait, what? And they're like, yeah, they're patrol officers, but they also, if there's a homicide, then we'll put them on detective, but then we'll put them back on patrol. So there wasn't a set, if you will, from my understanding, from what I've been told by the Gary police officers I've spoken to, there wasn't set officers who were housed in like a homicide unit. It's just whoever was kind of there, who was a patrol officer. I mean, they had a patrol officer, you know, during Chris's interrogation in the room.
Mm-hmm.
They had an SRO in the room while he was being interrogated. Why? Why were these people in the room with Chris while these detectives, these homicide detectives, were interrogating him? It made no sense. Made no sense. The other thing I want you to think about, and I haven't heard it this season, but I heard you talk about how Chris walks in, knocks on the, you know, on the second statement that Lewis, I think it was Detective Donald, said that Chris, this is during, I believe during trial, but yeah, that Chris knocked on the door and said, okay, I'm going to tell you what happened or whatever. Are you kidding me?
When he's letting him wander around. It's so ridiculous.
Nobody's wandering around.
Yeah.
Jimmy Donald, who was wrongfully incarcerated for 24 years, has told me what happened to him. He said he was handcuffed to a wall. I mean, he was the first one who caught that and said, there's no way that anybody is going to be walking around. So we already know that's a false statement that Lewis Donald made. Because it just wouldn't, you don't bring a guy in for five homicides and just let him walk around, you know, and just do whatever he wants to do. So that was a huge red flag for me. I also found out, I do these police trainings, and I did a police training at Gary. I did not take Mr. Donald with me. I took a different exoneree, and we talked about wrongful convictions, the contributing factors. I learned during this training session that the Gary Police Department, they actually can, the detectives working a homicide case or any case, if there's a PC hold, they do not have to afford that arrestee a phone call. I was like, wait, what? I heard that from all of these officers talking to me. They were like, no, you know, it's up to the detective to decide whether the arrestee will be able to make a phone call. So, you know, whoever the detectives working Chris Bynum's case, we know that Chris has mentioned that he was not allowed to make phone calls. He wasn't allowed to get an attorney. Actually, was that? I think he did talk about that, right?
Yeah. He talked a lot about it in the PCR testimony,
okay,
about not
being
able to get an attorney.
I was like, am I spilling beans that I'm not supposed to be spilling? So at any rate, I confirmed really what Chris had said, that, you know, if a detective decides that they don't want to allow an arrestee a phone call, they don't have to give them that phone call.
Yeah, that's actually, it's a good point. Something to just point out to the listeners too, just in general. That's actually one of the things that I think TV has made people, it's just like when people are like, well, they arrested me and they didn't read me my rights.
Right.
Like, well, if they weren't questioning you, they don't have to. It's the same thing. The whole on TV, it's always, I get my phone call. In most departments, it's not policy that you have to get one. So that doesn't surprise me that they don't have to.
They don't have to, but really common practice is that they should. And mm-hmm. I've talked to detectives and police officers in the other police departments, and they were shocked they were shocked. And that's still a practice as of last year with Gary PD, from what the officers told me. And I asked them why. What would be the reason not to allow somebody you arrest to make a phone call? And the response I received was, well, because they could be engaging in something criminal. And I said, well, that's really simple then. Stand next to them when they're calling and you can hear the conversation that's taking place. You can hear them ask, you know, talking to their attorney, yeah, saying, hey, I was arrested. I need you to come here, blah, 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 right? That's not challenging.
You just said what I've always thought was the reason is because they don't want to make it a phone call that's going to lead to them getting an attorney.
That's exactly what you and I know that. I mean, this is just common sense, common sense. I mean, and they had no response when I said that. Why wouldn't you just stand in the room while they make that phone call? I mean, to me, that seems like a very concerning practice for police officers. They should be, and even calling family members to let family members know where you are for 48 hours. I mean, if, you know, if I've got children, if they're gone for 48 hours and I don't know where they are, I'm going to be terrified.
Right.
Right?
Yeah. I've always thought departments that do that, it's what they don't want is somebody waives their Miranda rights and then they call dad and be like, hey, I got arrested. They're questioning me. And they don't want dad to be like, don't say another word. I'm calling an attorney.
Right. I mean, we know they don't want attorney there. I mean, it just makes sense. And I shouldn't say they, because there are some really good police officers out there. There are some really good detectives. I don't think they existed in this particular case. I think that this was so flawed from, you know, from the get-go. And getting back to even looking at the statements, if your listeners have reviewed the statements that Larry Brooks made and others, you'll see that the font is different in his statement. If you look at page one and you go to the next page, it's like the first page, it's all capital. Like the questions were preset and then they would type in the answer or whatever. And then in the next page, it's all the same font. Then at the last page, it's like, it looks like it's all capital again. It's just bizarre to me how the font changes.
Well, I don't know if you heard, it was a while ago. There's all kinds of weird stuff with these, and I use air quotes when I say transcript. If you listened to the episode where we talked about Michelle Flores's statement, like that one, like there's pages missing. There's the most important page in that statement isn't signed by her. It's the only one that isn't signed by her. Like there's definitely some shenanigans that go on. And I think this is a thing I've never seen, is interviewing people, not recording it, and then making a report to look like a transcript that's not a transcript. I've never even heard of that before, this case.
I think you've already touched upon the fact that even Larry, you know, refers to AMP as Anthony Jeffers. And, you know, people are referring to folks with their, you know, legal name instead of their, you know, nickname or their street name, which does not make sense. It just does not make sense.
Speaking of which, I'm probably going to catch you off guard on this because you haven't heard this. If you guys are hearing this Sunday, Dr. Jackson and I are discussing this on Wednesday. So she hasn't heard the follow-up yet because it doesn't come out till Friday. Regarding the Matthews confession, I'm just curious your take on this, and somebody may have picked up on it, but one of my listeners did and I hadn't. In Matthew's confession, he mentions Liz and Sheila by name. Mm-hmm. What my listener pointed out was he called her Sheila, and we learn from Michelle and her husband that no one called her Sheila.
They only
called her Renee. And I hadn't caught that. Have any of you guys noticed that before or have thoughts on that?
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And actually, there's really two Renees involved.
Right.
So Sheila goes by Renee, and then
so does
one
Angela.
Of the sisters, Angie, goes by Renee. So I actually refer to Sheila as Sheila Renee, just because it keeps it clean for me, so I know. But yeah, I mean, no one would have referred to her as Sheila. They would have said Renee.
And I had missed it because of that, which I said, I think in episode one, I'm going to call her Sheila and call her Angela so we don't get them confused. And I've been doing it for so many months that I forgot that that's not what she went by.
No, she goes by Renee. She went by Renee. I mean, that was her, you know, that was her name. Everybody called her Renee.
Yeah. So it was just interesting. It was like all the different things when I'm looking at that confession and the statement, you know, I'm kind of testing it for veracity. It's like, well, most of the stuff, like, you know, he mentioned them by name. He doesn't know the other two's name. And then somebody's like, yeah, but the name he said is her government name. It's not the name she went by. So, yeah, I haven't quite figured out what to make of that yet.
I don't know what to make of it either. That video, though, there's a lot that I don't know what to make of it. You know,
right.
It's a very confusing, complicated video. There's all sorts of different theories about the video. Even our legal team, we all have different lens on the video. And at the end of the day, I don't think we'll really understand that video until we find that notary and
right.
understand, you know, what happened on that day that statement was notarized. I don't think we're going to ever know until we, you know, we hear from her.
Yeah, I agree completely. And I think I also mentioned on this week's follow up that that's like priority one for me right now is tracking down all the people connected to that. And once we get through Nikki's notes, just so you guys know, because I promised on Friday, I am going to get into a little bit more about that because I did learn more about the gentleman who delivered the is actually the one who delivered that whole confession to Fran Watson's team. But we'll get to that in a minute. I want to finish getting through Dr. Jackson's notes.
Yeah, no, it's okay. The other thing I wanted to point out, and I don't recall hearing it, but I want you to really think about the fact that when Shaky came to the police station, you know, he went there voluntarily, right? Which is interesting because who in their right mind would walk into a police station without an attorney if they knew they were being accused of 5 murders?
Right.
He just walks in and said, I hear you're looking for me. I mean, seriously?
Yeah, especially somebody who has a criminal past, present, and future, you know, to do that. I've always thought that was odd. But, you know, when you put a pin on it like that and you think about it, like, it almost seems like he knew he was walking out of there at the end of it.
Yeah, without, in my opinion, there's no question he knew that he was going to be walking out of there.
Mm-hmm.
Without question. And I know you mentioned that he and Chris were put together, I think you called it the yard. They were put together on the range, and
yeah.
Timmy's explained to me what that range is. So basically, they open up the cell doors at the, and you got to understand, this is a police jail. This isn't a county jail.
Right.
And so they open up the cell and they're literally just outside of their cell.
Mm-hmm.
And let's really think about that. Let's unpack that. What detectives would put 2 people who are, you know, possibly co-defendants out on the range together to have conversation? They won't even let them make a phone call, but they're going to let them talk to each other on the range? I don't think so.
No, and that's
Unless
a really good point.
There was a reason for it.
Right. And it's a good point because you could see them doing that, like putting them in an interrogation room where they're secretly being recorded to see if they say something, but giving them a space to have private conversation.
No, not without an ulterior motive.
Right. And it's the level of how many things stink about that whole situation just keeps adding up.
This whole case stinks. This whole case stinks. And at the end of the day, and I have said this so many times, whether you like Chris Bynum, you believe in him, or you don't believe in him and you don't like him, at the end of the day, there are so many questions and we all have different theories. Your listeners have different theories. Everybody has a different theory. So what that tells me is, at the very minimum, Chris Bynum deserves a new trial.
Yeah.
At the very minimum, he deserves a new trial because remember, the standard of proof to convict somebody is beyond a reasonable doubt. And I do believe if he went to trial today, there's so much reasonable doubt that he would not be convicted.
Yeah, I mean, there's really no case against him. There was, and it was flimsy enough back then, and now there's so many more elements that cut against the state's case. Yeah, I agree completely.
They would have done their due diligence, and I'm using air quotes, the detectives, you know. Maybe those witnesses would have been found, you know,
right.
during trial, and that jury could have heard from those witnesses, and the outcome would have been different. There's no question in my mind the outcome would have been different.
Hey, everybody, Bob here. I'm interrupting this ad break to tell you how you can never have to hear another ad and take a huge step towards helping us continue our work all at the same time. As most of you know, I provide all investigative and advocacy services to the people and attorneys that we cover on the show completely free. Over the years, we provided hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of professional investigations to the wrongfully convicted, completely free of charge. And the reason that we're able to do that is in large part thanks to the support of listeners like you. Our Patreon community funds the overwhelming majority of our work, and I want to take this opportunity to ask and encourage you to join the club. The base level membership is just $5 a month. Now, while that's only a cup of coffee's worth out of your account, it makes all the difference in the world to us and the people that we work with. And for your $5 a month, you get a whole list of extra content, exclusive just for patrons. Every week, Janet, Zach, and I do an hour-long live stream just for our patrons. You also get an unedited video version of the Friday follow-up every week, a weekly pregame podcast that drops into your podcast feed. Patrons often get to participate in interviews that we do on the show live days or weeks before the rest of the audience gets to hear them. And of course, the best part, all of our content is completely ad-free for our patrons at the $5 a month level. Patreon really is the only way that we're able to keep doing this work. And it would mean the absolute world to me, Zach, Janet, and Erica if you'd consider joining if you're able to do so. Joining the Patreon community is super easy. Just go to patreon.com/truthandjustice to sign up. Or you can go right to the episode description of this or any episode and just click the link. Thank you from the bottom of our hearts for your support. And now I'll return you to your regularly scheduled ads.
This is Bowen Yang.
And Matt Rogers from Las Culturistas with Matt Rogers.
And Bowen Yang.
JBL wireless earbuds are for those who are the first to try something unique.
The first wireless earbuds on the market with a touchscreen case, which allows you to control your audio without reaching for your phone. They also have a touchscreen smart charging case for one-touch control.
I love being able to touch my buds and control the volume.
With a built-in wireless transmitter that lets you plug and play with any device you want, JBL wireless earbuds can connects you to all your favorite music, movies, and games.
The wireless transmitter also allows for JBL superior spatial sound that takes any audio and turns it into a 360 immersive experience.
They've got a next-gen smart charging case for a seamless listening experience. Leave your phone in your pocket. The smart charging case has all the features you need to fully control and customize your listening experience and the earbud settings in multiple languages right from the case.
Use the smart charging case to see what song is playing or who's calling you, or personalize the tactile screen with your favorite photo.
Check the dynamic lock screen to get info on battery life status, time, messages, etc.
JBL wireless earbuds. Grab a pair at jbl.com.
The clock's running out on December deal drops at Lowe's, but there's still time to wrap up something they'll love. Shop great gifts under $50, like the DeWalt Elite Series 100-piece bit set. Plus, if you order by 2 p.m., you get same-day delivery by 8 p.m. Shop December deal drops while you can. Lowe's. We help, you save.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time, and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget, so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is the social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Casino, America's social casino.
The sad part is I don't think there's any way that Chris gets convicted. But what makes me more sad is, you know, who also deserved justice here is these five victims.
Yes.
And I don't know that they would get it based on this evidence because they did such a shitty job of all the missteps, you know, not going to the VFW and getting surveillance footage, not going to the liquor store and talking to the people there and getting surveillance footage. There's so many different aspects that you can't recreate now 25 years later. That could have been done then.
Donald too. He was at a auto dealership. Had they gone to that dealership, they would have had tape to show that he had been there. But nobody went and got that tape. It was too late by the time his attorney came up with it. I mean, it's just this hodgepodge. And you said it, episode one, and I think it was beautifully said. You said they solved this in 24 hours. We've been working on this for 5 years, and we haven't solved it.
Right.
Right? And I think it is so unfair that these folks who truly are factually innocent, it's so easy to convict them, and it's so hard to exonerate them, right? Mm-hmm. It's so hard. And the one thing everybody says to me, if you really want to exonerate him, you have to figure out who did this. I'm not a police officer. I'm not a prosecutor. Right. It should not be my job. It should be their job to figure out who did this.
Yeah.
Here we all are.
And that's the broken part of our system is once you get convicted to undo it, it now becomes, well, yeah, it's the police's job to figure out who did this. But until the convictions, it's like this like catch 22. They're like, you have to prove who did it in order to overturn the conviction. But the police won't look into who actually did it as long as the conviction stands. So you just keep going round and round and round in circles until you find an investigator that can hopefully get it done. And in this case, it becomes very difficult. I think that there's open doors here now with some of the information we got from the affidavits, from, like you mentioned, I've mentioned several times, this notary. If we can, there's strings we can pull at now, but there's nothing is going to replace the lack of investigation in those first 24 hours.
Right. We all know that the first 48 hours is the most important in solving these types of crimes. And I just cannot even wrap my head around the fact that none of the family members were talked to. I don't see any reports of the neighbors really having been, you know, interviewed. It's just hard for me to understand. Phone records. I mean, you know, let's just get back to the very basic. Where are the phone records? Michelle Flores said that Liz made a phone call. Where are those phone records?
All would have been super easy for them to get a hold of back then.
Yeah, they would have had that phone record. They would have known what time Liz had made that phone call, and it would have been, oh, well, here's who she talked to. If they would have, and I think you've already talked about this, gone to the liquor store, looked at the camera. There's so many things. And I think you called one of your episodes, maybe your last one, maybe two episodes ago, solvable. This case was solvable. And now it's very difficult, but we know that there's a lot of evidence pointing away from Chris Bynum.
Well, and none of it points to him, and that's a big distinction. None of it point when you do continued investigation over the course of 25 years, and not one single thing, not one single witness, not one other piece of evidence points you back in the direction of Chris Bynum. That's a massive red flag, and I know I don't want to keep harping on it because I've already lost my mind about it enough times on here, but you know, the whole time I'm like, we need to figure out the liquor store. It had to be one of these. They should can't. And then when I read Michelle Flores's, when I finally got a hold of her statement and read it, I was like, are you freaking kidding me? She literally told them exactly which liquor store she went to.
Right. She did.
And they didn't bother to go check it out. I'm curious because it's one of the things that's been on, and I don't know if now of all these years later, if we'd be able to find this out, but has anybody, have you or anybody from your team gone to that liquor store? Does it still exist to see if there were surveillance there?
I don't know about the liquor store. I have been to the ball field.
Yeah.
We have gone to the ball field. And I believe one of your listeners asked about or questioned, you know, how the person could see Shaky running, right? There is a street lamp. There is a very big street lamp. So I don't think that that's an impossibility that this person would have seen Shaky. The other thing is, I believe one of your listeners also asked something about Gerald Matthews. Could they have mistaken him for Shaky? Anything is possible, right? But one thing to note is that this neighborhood in Etna, it was people knew everybody kind of knew everybody, right? Mm-hmm. And Gerald Matthews was not from Etna. He was actually from Illinois. Okay. So he didn't grow up in this community. So he wouldn't know, or people wouldn't know Gerald Matthews like they would know Shaky, Chris Bynum, right, and all the others, you know, who grew up in that community. So I think it would be very hard for somebody to identify Gerald Matthews if they didn't know who he was from him not living in that community for many, many years, most of his life, actually.
Yeah. And we talked about that question came up. We talked about it in the episode that's coming out on Friday. And I mentioned, too, the only way I could see that being a possibility would be if it was a cross racial identification and it wasn't, you know, there's. You know, if it was a white person that saw him running away, you know, they may think that they look the same, but no one of the same. And this is, you know, we talked about this is, you know, this is well studied and documented that this is an issue where, you know, a person of color looking at two people of color can easily distinguish between the two, whereas, say, a white person looking at two people of color have a lot harder time distinguishing between the two. To them, they look the same when they don't really look the same.
Absolutely. And that's, I'm going back to Timmy Donald's case, you know, misidentification. And it was actually a white woman and an African-American woman. But it was really the white woman who first misidentified him and then the African-American woman saying, oh, yeah, that might have been him. Yeah. So that's really an important thing to consider. And let's just even think about it. Why would somebody throw Shaky's name into this? Why would they do that? You know, because they would be afraid for their own safety, right? Because we've heard that he was a very scary person in the community.
Yeah. And it's like I said in the episode, that person, all these people that came forward with information about Shaky had nothing to gain and everything to lose by doing so.
Yeah. And that was a very good point that you made. And I think for a woman to move, you know, that tells you something. She was that afraid, you know, yeah, that she took her children and she left.
Yeah. Do you still have more on your notes you want to cover?
I think there's so many things I want to cover, but I just have to be cautious with, you know, not sharing, oversharing information. Sure. And I hate that because I wish I could just share everything. But unfortunately, yeah, I have to protect the integrity of the investigation.
Right.
Fortunately, I guess.
Yeah. So this is a good time. I want to move on and talk about when I produced that episode, which was over a week ago, this last one, with the whole Gerald Matthews, Chris Stokes confession. I was looking into, I had mentioned in the episode that I'm trying to track down, you know, the return address on the envelope came from a Melissa Williams, and it gave a very specific address in Indianapolis. Mm-hmm. I looked at, like, that person does not exist from that address. I know who owned that house. I know where it's at. I did all this background work on that and the postmark from Peru. None of that made sense. And then I found through one of the writs where it mentioned that there was some PCR testimony from someone named Roger Shannon.
That's
and
right.
So I was able to get a hold of that PCR testimony thinking, well, this is going to clear it up. Now we're going to know how this happened. And I'm sure you've read that testimony.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
I have never been more confused about a situation in my this is the story, as I recall it from reading the testimony. So Roger Shannon says that he's a contractor. He has some rental houses. Gerald Matthews had come to him, wanted to rent a place from him, said he was an ex-con. He was looking for a place. He doesn't rent to him. But he says, well, Chris says that, or Gerald, whatever you want to call him, you know, well, do you have any work for me? So he lets him basically he's doing day labor for him. He's paying him $100 a day to do day labor for him. Doesn't really know this guy at all. So he's working for him for a few weeks. And then one day he gives him, and there's so much discussion about what this briefcase or package looks like. But he says, gives him this
manila envelope.
Yeah. Well, he says that he gave him a black leather, sounds like accordion folder that had the envelope
Sorry. Yes. Yeah. I'm thinking about what was mailed out. Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah. So he gives him this package and he says, hey, I want you to hang on to this. And if something ever happens to me, I want you to make sure it gets into the right hands. So then he says he never opens it, doesn't look at it. And then it just, everything gets confusing. So then he says that, you know, Chris stopped showing up to work, but that doesn't surprise him. But then he says, well, you know, the attorneys are asking him, well, how did you learn about his death? And he says something he got, you know, the whole testimony, he's like, you know how you get the news flashes on your phone. There's a news flash on my phone and I see the name Gerald Matthews had died. And so he's like, oh, so he got, so then he opens it up and sees what's in there. And he says, apparently, because one thing I had said in the episode is I don't know how he got it back when he sent it to the prosecutor's office. He says there's multiple copies of it and he starts sending them out all over the place. And the attorney asks him, why did you put this return address on it?
Right.
And he just says, well, I didn't want to be involved, so I just picked an address, which is crazy because this isn't like I wrote down 123 Main Street. It's a long 5-digit address from a subdivision in Indiana. Like, it's very specific. And even the zip.
It's crazy.
Yeah. And the zip code on it is correct for that, because I checked that for that address. Like, what the hell? But then he puts this name. So he says he does that because he wants to get out of it. Well, then the attorney asks him, so if you mail it, because, and he says he has a friend in Indianapolis or something, he's down there when he mails it from Indy. And that's why he put Indianapolis on it. And then the attorney says, well, why is it postmarked from Peru, Indiana, which is about an hour north of there? And he goes, well, that's just how the post office works. If you drop it off at Indy, then it goes out to a hub somewhere. And then the attorney just moves past it. But just so you know, that's, first of all, not how it works. The postmark is the post office you dropped it off to. Second of all, in Indiana, it would be the other way around if that were the case, because anything that goes mailed from anywhere ends up going to Indianapolis, then going out to the next place. It doesn't start in Indy and then go to little Peru, Indiana, and then go out. So, like, that story was BS. It doesn't make, at the very least, it doesn't make any sense. And then he says he wants to stay out of it. And then he finds out that he doesn't get a response from the Scott King he sent it to. And he finds out that Fran Watson at IU is working on Chris's case. And so he calls her. That's how they found him. He says he calls her and he dances around the fact that he's being wrongfully accused of something. And that's why he wanted to talk to her, because he knows what it feels like. But also he wants to talk to her about it. And then at the same time, he's saying he wanted to stay out of it. But then he told her, well, I sent you this package. And she was like, well, what package did you send? Because it had come in. They didn't specify when, but it had come in sometime prior to that. And she realizes, oh, you're the guy that sent this confession tape to us. So then they talk to him about that. And he gets their whole thing where at some point he's crying because he's talking about how his mom always told him to, you know, was very religious, told him to do the right thing. Mm-hmm. And so he wanted to make sure he was doing the right thing with this and doing right by Gerald Matthews. And then he moved back to Chicago, or went back to Chicago. And then when they were ready to file the writ, they tracked him down. They had a PI or whatever track him down, give him the subpoena. So he comes in and gives this testimony. So that, I'm sure, was confusing the way I just described it. I'll post the transcripts and you'll be even more confused, because you got to parse through it to get to that. But so that's what happened. That's the story of what happened, that this guy, Roger Shannon, is the one that got it all from Matthews. Have you guys done much looking into any of this, or I guess, what are your thoughts on the whole situation? Because I'm baffled by it.
With the video?
No, just the whole Roger Shannon story.
So, yeah, I have not met with Roger Shannon or even looked for him. But when you really think about it, I think that somebody who believed that he was going to be killed, you know, it makes sense to me that somebody who was going to be killed would tell somebody who's not in his normal world, like, hold this package, and he, you know, would want to, I guess, clear his conscience, right?
Right.
I don't know what this whole, who Roger Shannon really is. I don't know, like, why he said, put Melissa on there. I have no idea. I couldn't even guess why he would do that. But I do believe at the end of the day, this is my opinion. And this is what I always tell my students. This is my opinion. It doesn't mean it's right. But I do believe if somebody really believed they were going to die, that before they meet their maker, that they're going to want to clear their conscience. I do believe that. Yeah. The issue, though, is very clear. The video contradicts the affidavits, right?
Right.
I think that's where the big problem lies. The video says, you know, we hear Gerald Matthews says, it's me and Rob G, right? But the affiants say it's Rob G and Shaky, right?
Yeah.
But what's interesting, when you look at the testimony of two of the affiants, they both talk about how Rob G says, you know, that he uses they use the same kind of terminology, like Shaky did some dumb shit. And
yeah.
like Rob G says, why'd you do that dumb shit? Like, that's an interesting thing that two different affiants use the same kind of verbiage from Rob G. So it tells me there has to be some credibility to that, because these affiants didn't know each other, right?
Yeah.
So there had to be something to that. I don't know the answer to the Roger Shannon thing. I wish I did. Maybe he knows more. Maybe he doesn't. I have no idea, but maybe it's not a bad idea to talk to him or find him. I don't know.
I mean, he's for sure on my list. I guess more than anything, I was wondering, am I just dense or did everyone else read that and get confused too? Because it was like, what is going on?
Well, I think everything from the video piece, from the whole thing was so confusing, very confusing and very difficult to unpack. You know, even who he sent those letters to. I mean, I spent a lot of time looking really at who did he send them to and why did he send them to those people, right?
Yeah.
Believe if I recall correctly, that he sent it to Scott King, who then, and Scott King, interestingly, ironically, whatever, was also Timmy Donald's attorney, but sent it over then to the prosecutor's office, because I don't believe the prosecutor's office had that. So I believe he sent it that way. Don't quote me on it, but I'm pretty sure I that's what I understand.
Yeah, I was frustrated reading it because I just felt like it was like, man, there's a lot of questions that could get answered here and they're not asking the right questions, you know?
Yeah.
And some of it was didn't have great answers for stuff, you know, like just all of it, you know, everything he gave kind of weird answers and then they just kind of moved on from it.
Yeah, and maybe he was just really scared. I mean, that's also a possibility. I mean, you know, you're now involved in this murder case, right? Somehow.
Yeah.
And I mean, that to me would be very scary. And maybe he truly just didn't want any part of this. And I can understand that. I could understand, like, hey, I promised this guy that I would do this. He's dead. So now I have to send this out because my mama taught me to keep your promises. And, you know, I'm going to do that. But how do I do this and keep myself out of this scenario? And so I'm making up a name. I did not know that it was a legit address and a, you know,
it's a really nice house in a nice subdivision. It was weird. Yeah.
I didn't know that. So,
yeah.
But
and to be clear, I'm not, you know, like I'm not looking at this thinking like, oh, this guy's nefarious or he's involved in it's literally the best I got with this is odd. This is really odd and something just doesn't quite add up. And it could even be as simple as, you know, I mean, the guy could have been 100 years old and suffering of dementia when he was testifying. I don't know.
I don't know.
I know is like the way he's relaying that story is, which again was also, I think, the PCR testimony was 6 years later, was like 2020?
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's also 6 years after the fact when he's given the story. So that's a possibility. But it was just, so it was more so just, man, that didn't answer my questions at all when I read that. So that's one of the things on my list is to be looking, because as I said, and again, you haven't heard this yet, but I talked a lot about in the follow-up this week that, you know, I think there's something here if we can get in contact with, specifically, as we keep saying, Talia Caldwell, and we can get in contact with maybe Roger Shannon. Unfortunately, obviously, Chris Stokes is dead and we can't, or Gerald Matthews, and we can't question him. But there's something happened. Somebody in his circle has to know what the hell happened here with the confession, because like we've discussed, there's elements of that. You haven't heard this yet either. We talked about the lamp. My first and Zach in our follow-up had the same, you know, when we first heard him saying, then I kicked over the lamp and left. My first thought was bullshit. That sounds like when a detective throws in a little detail so you have guilty knowledge. But then the more I thought back on it, in 2014, why would anyone know that detail? And then I thought back to, actually, to me now, it cuts the other way, because what did Larry say from the beginning, that they said, you know, cut the lights off and leave? Well, he didn't say, I flipped the light switch and I turned the lights off and left. He said, I kicked, it's like, well, it was 1 o'clock in the morning. What if the only light on in the room was the lamp? And so when they says, get, you know, cut the lights off and get out of here, if the way to do that was to kick over the lamp, like now it's cutting back to, well, it actually feels more true to me. Yeah. Because that's not that's a deeper level of thinking than just repeating back whatever was said in the trial transcript. But then you got the things like, why did he say they were getting high earlier? And why did he call Sheila instead of Renee? So it's.
Amazon 5-Star Theater presents Real Customer Reviews, performed by Eva Longoria. Tonight's review, Sports Briefs. Oh boy, where do I even start with these performance mesh boxer briefs? They keep everything in place, even during intense jumping jacks. These boxer briefs are like a magician's trick. You know the one, where you go, where did that rabbit come from? So if you're looking for underwear that not only performs well, but also gives your package the attention it deserves, then look no further. 5 stars, Nicolicious. Thank you for listening to Amazon 5-Star Theater. There are endless gifts that can make the male friend in your life feel supported and heroic. Gifts that make them feel like they can conquer jumping jacks and perform impromptu magic tricks. And they're all on Amazon. Shop the perfect gift this holiday season on Amazon.
This is Bowen Yang.
And Matt Rogers from Las Culturistas with Matt Rogers.
And Bowen Yang.
JBL wireless earbuds are for those who are the first to try something unique.
The first wireless earbuds on the market with a touchscreen case, which allows you to control your audio without reaching for your phone. They also have a touchscreen smart charging case for one-touch control.
I love being able to touch my buds and control the volume.
With a built-in wireless transmitter that lets you plug and play with any device you want, JBL wireless earbuds connects you to all your favorite music, movies, and games.
The wireless transmitter also allows for JBL superior spatial sound that takes any audio and turns it into a 360 immersive experience.
They've got a next-gen smart charging case for a seamless listening experience. Leave your phone in your pocket. The smart charging case has all the features you need to fully control and customize your listening experience and the earbud settings in multiple languages right from the case.
Use the smart charging case to see what song is playing or who's calling you, or personalize the tactile screen with your favorite photo.
Check the dynamic lock screen to get info on battery life status, time, messages, etc.
JBL wireless earbuds. Grab a pair at jbl.com.
The clock's running out on December deal drops at Lowe's, but there's still time to wrap up something they'll love. Shop great gifts under $50, like the DeWalt Elite Series 100-piece bit set. Plus, if you order by 2 p.m., you get same-day delivery by 8 p.m. Shop December deal drops while you can. Lowe's. We help, you save.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news. It doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your reoccurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free to play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Yeah, and it, you know, when you even think about him talking, and I know you and I have talked about this before, but about the baby on the couch, right? I thought he was saying he heard, but you explained that, you know, that he said nobody hurt the baby, right? It sounds to me, why would you even add that piece in? I mean, that was that's a really big question. Why would you say nobody hurt it? Nobody hurt that baby. I mean, it's almost like, we did this horrible thing, but we didn't hurt the child. We didn't hurt the child. And I thought that's an interesting thing too, to add. I mean, you could say there was a baby, you know, there was a baby on the couch, but to add, we didn't hurt it, you know, and nobody heard it. That's really an interesting tagline to that statement.
It's one of the most intriguing, you know, I've done a lot of statement analysis over the last 10 years, and this is a tricky one. Because there's so many, you know, that usually it's like, okay, well, all of this, for this reason, I can say, I don't believe this one, or I do believe it. And this one, it's like, man, this really feels very true to me. But then this piece, but then it gets even more complicated because you have this written version and the fact that it's really difficult to grasp the inflection and things in his voice because he appears to be reading it why he's doing it.
Right. But how far away was, like, you know, let's really think about that. It does look like he's reading it, but how far away was a piece of paper for him? And we don't hear the page churning. We hear nothing, right? Where's he reading from?
Yeah. We, you and I just talked about it before we went on the air. That's one I hadn't really thought about too. Cause yeah, in the listeners haven't seen the video, but you can see, it looks in his eyes like he's reading something, but the camera is a few feet away from him.
At least. Right.
Yeah.
At least it's not a close up, you know, like a selfie, like right in front of you. So where would somebody be holding the statement for him to be reading? And if they were, we know there were multiple pages. Were they turning the pages? How could he have been reading this? I'm trying to figure out that piece of this video. Maybe your listeners can figure this out because we just have been literally banging our heads against the wall about. Yeah. How did this happen? How did he, you know, how did this written transcript, this notarized statement, how was this done? And the video was, you know, and I know you and I were just talking about this before, but, you know, is it even possible that he, and I'm just throwing it out there, I'm not saying I believe this, I'm just throwing it out, but did he make the statement, like looking in the phone camera, and did he just make the statement and then later it was transcribed? I don't know. I mean, but it looks like he's reading it. And your listeners, if they see the video, they will see it looks like he is reading.
Well, and it sounds like he's reading.
And he's fidgeting, he's twisting his arms, like he is nervous, right? Mm-hmm. He is nervous. Like, and you know, I've heard, you know, from the prosecutor's office saying, well, yeah, because somebody had a gun to his head. And I'm like, if you're confessing to five murders, I think you'd be nervous. I think anybody who'd be confessing to five murders would be nervous. I'm not sure if Gerald Matthews participated in the murders. I have no idea. But there's no question in my mind that he has knowledge about the murders.
Yeah. And I'll say this. I certainly wouldn't consider myself an expert, but I did spend a lot of time. Because my thought, too, is like, OK, is somebody threatening him? So I'm doing things like looking at his eyes to see, you know, are you looking up from what you're reading? Because I'm sorry, if somebody's standing there pointing a gun at you, you're going to glance at them throughout the process. And that doesn't have there's no indication to me. There's the shadows in the room. There's nothing to me to indicate that, you know, he was being, you know, held at gunpoint when he did it.
Well, let's even take it a step further. If he was being held at gunpoint, why not just kill him after the video's done and the statement's done? Why wait like 2 weeks or whatever it is, right? That's the piece that puzzles me. If he was being threatened to do this video, right? Why not just kill him right then and there?
And certainly there could be a threat. I posited that, you know, a version of that on Sunday, that there, you know, a version of that where he's been threatened, like, you're going to do this or I'm going to kill you. But the idea, you know, something like that could have happened. But
why would they threaten him? I mean, the only prosecutor says, well, you know, they might say, well, Chris is somebody, you know, his team, you know, his people, you know, did this and coerced him. Well, then they would have killed him.
Right.
They would have killed him. So he couldn't go tell people, listen, they just threatened me and I had to do this, right? He wouldn't go to, let's say, Roger Shannon and say, I was threatened and I had, you know, blah, blah, blah. So I have a real hard time with that. Maybe I could be wrong with it, but I just can't understand how anybody would say that somebody from Chris's, you know, group or camp or whatever you want to call it would threaten him and then not actually act it out. And from my understanding, Matthew's murder, there were arrests, and I don't think there was ever any, or not, maybe not arrests, but there were people who were called in, and I don't think any of them were related to any of these five murders.
Yeah, and also, you haven't heard this yet either, but just to kind of put the idea in your mind, one of my listeners had what I thought was a really good theory that we talked about in Friday's episode, that what made sense to them, and it does make some good sense to me as well, is if it wasn't, you know, if we're talking about a scenario where Shaky is involved, because I just believe, like, it's too much for him just to be left out of this, and there's too many reasons. But so if we're in a world where Shaky was involved with this, their theory was, well, what it was is Matthews goes to Shaky and he's like, man, I've got a guilty conscience. I've got to come clean. And the threat is, well, you better leave my name out of it. You better keep me out of it. Something like, so, you know, or even he says, I'm going to come clean, but I'm going to leave you out of it. I'm just going to mention Rob, but I can't do it. And he comes and it goes that way, as opposed to, you know, like Shaky going to him and pushing him and threatening him to do this thing. Maybe that it cut the other way.
He's dead. He's not afraid of Rob G because Rob G is dead. Right. Rob G.
Right.
But then, you know, I mean, that's an interesting thought, but I would think Shaky or whomever would be like, you know, you're not going to be talking about this. And, you know, they already got Chris sitting in prison. So why would you say an innocent man is sitting in prison? Why would Shaky want Chris to come home? I mean, it just, that part doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, so much of it doesn't make sense.
This is the craziest, most complicated case. And at the end of the day, if police would have done their due diligence and the prosecutors would have done their due diligence, we wouldn't be on this podcast talking about this nightmare, right? I mean, you know, Shanita, when you look at what she went through, if, you know, if police would have, or prosecutors even, would have really talked to her and not, you know, the police obviously had, you know, from her statements, had threatened her and all of that stuff, right? So if somebody would have actually even asked her to testify at trial, right, about what had happened. I don't believe she testified. Did she? I mean, I don't recall her testifying.
No, I don't think so.
That would have been interesting to hear what happened to her and how they got to Chris, right? I mean, there's so much that the jury did not hear.
Yeah.
So much of this backstory that they did not hear. And there were so many important people who were around during these days that should have been questioned, who could have afforded some answers, and they just weren't asked. And I do believe one of your listeners asked about whether Amp lived in that house or something. It's just coming back to me. And I know, I mean, Amp was also a father, you know, he had children, or maybe, I don't know if he had more than Amp Jr., but what we do know is he has a son. And I'm not sure if he lived with his son or didn't live with his son, but, you know, he didn't even like live in that house. But from what I have understood about the community, people know that there's certain houses you go to for whatever drugs you're looking for or whatever, or they know where to find people, right? And yeah. His girlfriend lived in that house. And so it would make sense that he would be at that house, yeah. even though that wasn't his permanent residence.
Right.
And I have been by that house. I have seen that house. Yeah, it's an interesting house because there's a door in the front, like there's a front door to the street, and then there's a back door that goes to the alley.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll let you guys talk more about the house if you guys want to get into the house later. But I think it's interesting to look at how could somebody have gotten in and out of that house.
Okay, so I think we're gonna stop this now because I know you and I have both been dreading doing this, but it has to be done. So before we wrap things up today, I'll just turn it over to Dr. Jackson. She has a pretty sad announcement for us.
I do. And Bob, thank you for giving me the opportunity to be here and share this very sad news with your listeners. But Tasha passed away on November 9th. And I got word on November 23rd when I contacted her common law husband, Travis, because he and I share a birthday. And I had texted him and said, happy birthday. And he texted me back. It was the worst birthday of his life and told me that Tasha had passed away. And I talked to him for the first time today and asked for permission to be able to share with the listeners, because I know your listeners had been introduced to Tasha. And I talked to her after she was on the show. And, she was worried about how she sounded and like we all are. I mean, everybody, when you get on a podcast, I know I do that. I'm like, gosh, why did I say that? Or, I sounded this way or I sounded that way. And I know she was really concerned about how she sounded and she sounded amazing. And Travis, has lost the love of his life. And I hope all of your listeners will keep him in their prayers. And she has a son who is, I don't think anybody knows this, but her son is incarcerated right now here in Indiana. And she was really fighting hard to bring her son home. She had a lot of struggles, and the struggles, I think, began even before her mom's murder, but were really exacerbated after her mother's murder. And one of the things I hope we all come out of, with Tasha is that she always wanted to find out who did this to her mother. I mean, she was really, every conversation I had with her is, help me figure out who did this to my mom. Yeah. And wherever she is today, whatever you believe in, I am praying that she is reunited with her mother and she got the answers that she needed. And I'm hoping, if you believe in divine anything, that she's going to send me some messages. I took the news very, very hard. I have spent a lot of time talking to Tasha and I'm going to miss her. I adored her. She shared a lot with me, including the fact that she believed that Chris was an innocent man and has always believed that and was always bothered that nobody had ever, ever spoken to her about her mother's murder. She said, nobody even thought to talk to me. No one. She's like, I reached out to attorneys and no one returned my phone call. So she was dismissed as if she was just nothing. And I know you all know that she was something and she was an incredible person and she left behind people who truly loved her. And I'm one of those people who truly cared about her. So I'm sad that she's not going to be back here because I think she was hoping she was going to be back on the podcast and, that we would figure out who did this and be able to help, bring home an innocent man.
Yeah, it is so tragic. And one thing that I do feel good about because, she stayed in pretty steady contact with me.
She told me
after I met her and she was on the show. And one thing that she did talk about coming back on. And the one thing she always reiterated every time I talked to her was she was always thanking me for letting the world know who her mother was.
Yes.
As a person. So,
yes. And she told me that too. And she really shared quite a bit. She'd get angry with me about certain things, just like people do, right? It's just normal for people who've known each other for a long time to get upset about certain things and then say, oh gosh, I didn't mean it or whatever. But one thing she said to me was she was so grateful she got to meet you. She had a lot of faith in you. I mean, her text messages to me about you were incredible. And the fact that she found somebody else who really cared about her mother. I mean, you know, for years, people have just talked about her mother as if she was a no one, really. And here, you know, it just think about from the first day. I mean, she told me, you know, that when they went to talk to the police, you know, police used derogatory term about her mother. Mm-hmm. And her grandmother slapped the police officer. And she said, this is what I've dealt with my whole life. And finally, people understand she was a mother. She was a mother and she was a grandmother and she was a wife. And so were all the other victims. They were people and they had families. And, you know, I hope for that I can help Tasha and all the other kids and family members figure out. I don't know if we'll ever figure out who actually did all of these things, but at least get some answers that will help, you know, resolve this case. So, Bob, thank you so much for giving Tasha a platform. I mean, I am so grateful that prior to her passing, that she was able to have her voice heard, finally have her voice heard. And she was really proud that she was able to do that.
Truth and Justice is an NBI Studios production, co-written and produced by Erica Bergenham. Music is created and composed by Caden Ladislaw. Follow-up episodes are co-hosted by Janet Varney and Zach Weber. Our logo font was created by Tate Krupa of Red Swan Graphic Design. Our website is created, managed, and maintained by Katie Ross of createdintandem.com. Thank you to our volunteer transcription team, Erica Cantor, Kathy McElhaney, Courtney Wimberly, Kaywood Yomnick, Danielle Rohr, Jennifer Athey, and Caroline Dwyer. Truth and Justice provides all investigative and advocacy work for the wrongfully convicted completely free of charge. We're able to do that in large part thanks to you, our listeners, through your generous pledges on Patreon. Patreon accounts for the overwhelming majority of our funding. The number one way you can support our work is to become a patron at patreon.com/truthandjustice. For just $5 a month, you'll get all episodes ad-free, a bonus pregame episode every Wednesday, and also a video version of the Friday follow-ups exclusive to our patrons. Patrons also get to participate and join the chat live in many of our interviews and get early access to much of our content. Just go to patreon.com/truthandjustice to sign up. You can also help us out by going to iTunes and leaving us a 5-star rating and review. It doesn't cost you a penny and goes a long way towards making the show more visible. If you have a new case that you'd like us to consider, you can submit your cases on our website, truthandjusticepod.com. Just click on the case submission button and fill out the form. You can always keep in touch with us through our email at theories@truthandjusticepod.com. You can like our Facebook page or join in on the conversation on the official Truth and Justice Podcast fans page. You can also connect with us on social media platform X @TruthJusticePod. And to follow our personal accounts on social media, I can be found at Bob Ruff Truth. Janet can be found at Janet Varney, and Zach is at Z to the Q. However you do it, stay engaged and stay in touch. But as for now, we're signing off. I'm Bob Ruff.
I'm Zach Weaver.
And I'm Janet Varney.
And this has been Truth and Justice.
When it comes to broccoli salad, Ohio, you got the secret ingredient on lock. Miracle Whip. Everyone from Toledo to Portsmouth knows that tangy zip. So here's to you for keeping it bold, keeping it zippy, and keeping Miracle Whip in all your favorite recipes. Buy now and get your tang on, Ohio.
This time of year, most of us are checking off our holiday gift lists. But identity thieves have lists too, and your personal information might be on them. Protect your identity with LifeLock. LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second and alerts you to threats you could miss. If your identity is stolen, LifeLock will fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Make this season about joy, not identity theft, with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.